Nachyami for the Orthodox Union. Sefer Shoftim, the Book of Judges. Perek Tes Vav, Chapter 15, Rabbi Binny Marilis. As we pick up our story again, we've just seen that Shimshon has essentially left his family, left his wife, has gone home to his parents. And we pick up the story as he is set to return to her. In the ensuing quote-unquote battle that takes place between him and the Plishtim. Keep in mind, as we read through another set of very interesting, unique behaviors at the hand of Shimshon, that what we said at the outset of Shimshon is that he's fighting this battle with the Plishtim by himself, and essentially doing everything he can to stir the pot and to increase the ire and anger of the Plishtim against him specifically, and at the same time doing what he can to avoid the involvement of the Jewish people in any manner at all, and keeping this a one-man, literally one-man versus the enemy type of a battle. Keep in mind that perhaps the reasoning is that the Jewish people are not deemed worthy to have a unique victory here, and therefore in any battle there would be consequences because of their behaviors. And only Shimshon sort of stands aside and apart and above everybody else to the group which he couldn't battle here against them. So as much as the Jewish people perhaps are not ready for a salvation or not deemed worthy of any sort of salvation, Shimshon himself is worthy of this type of an event and that type of victory, and sort of that's where we're working towards. And ultimately we'll see that he's not as successful in life as he ultimately will be in death as it relates to the Plishtim. Pick up a story again. As I mentioned, Shimshon has left his spouse. His spouse has been given over. His wife has been given over to somebody else, and he went home. So it was in the days of the wheat harvest. Shimshon is ishto b'gdi izim. Shimshon remembers, quote-unquote, remembers his wife. And he remembers her with an animal, with a goat. Idea being that the goat would be a gift to her, essentially. Vayomer, he says, Avoh el ishi hechadra, and I will come to my wife in our marital bed, into our room. Lo nesano aviha lavo. And her father does not allow him to enter. The Das Sofrim understands that perhaps what follows is the manner in which Shimshon will stir the pot this time. That is to say that the timing of the event, the Ketzir Chitim, is very significant here. And the manner in which Shimshon comes back to his wife, is also curious and set up to fail, essentially. Set up so that he will be stopped. Set up so that he can increase the situation and to raise it to a new level and to levy some sort of an attack at the Plishtim, if only as it relates to his wife circumstantially. But he's essentially using the notion that he is out of the home and that she's been given to somebody else as an excuse, as his sort of a way in to battle the Plishtim. The father does not let him in. Vayomer Aviha, the father says, Amor Amarti Kisano Sinesa. was told to me, essentially, that you hated her. Different commentaries essentially write that you hated her because of what she did, of how she allowed your riddle to be solved. You hated her. So, what did I do? I did what everyone would do. And I gave her to somebody else. Isn't now her younger sister better than she? Have her in her place. Marry the second child. The oldest daughter, oops, I made a mistake. I thought you hated her. I didn't think you were coming back. She told, I figured you were done, so I gave her to a friend. Marry the younger one. Leomer Lahem Shimshon. Shimshon says, Nikesi hampa mi plishtim. I will be essentially clean this time from what I did to the plishtim. Ki ose ani imam ra'a. Because it is that I'm going to do evil to them. As he says, is essentially he now has his reason. Here it is, his wife has been given to another man. He has complained. He has levied a complaint against her. He has desired to take her back. The father explains why not. And he feels like he has a legitimate gripe. And he's going to say that if we strike a blow against the plishtim, then in fact he's blameless for the blow that's to be struck against them. So what does he do? He does something most interesting and unique and quite unfathomable. In verse 4 we hear about this thing, this action, where Shimshon takes the tails of foxes and he uses them to set the area of the plishtim aflame. Vayilech Shimshon goes, Vayilkod shlosh meos shualim, and he seizes 300 foxes. It's hard to fathom such a situation, but again, the life of Shimshon is quite miraculous. And here we see this incredible strength that he has, as well as the great miracles that surrounded him. So he captures 300 foxes. V'yikach lapidim, he takes torches, v'yifen zanav el zanav, and he turns them tail to tail, essentially. And he puts a torch between the two tails, essentially tying this item, this torch, between the two tails of the animals. So you have 300 animals and 150 torches. What does he do? He sets them free, essentially, on the plishtim. Vayaver eish balapidim. He sets the torches aflame. Vayishalach bekamos plishtim. And he sends them out to the fields of the plishtim. Vayaver migadish v'ad kama v'ad kerem zavis. Essentially burns everything. He burns the stacks of grain, the standing grain. Kama is the standing grain, but Karen Zayis until the areas of the olives, the olive groves. So here, the timing is significant. Perhaps the Das Sofim offers that Shimshon waits till the time of the Ketzir Chitim, the time of the harvest, where this would hurt the Plishtim the most. He sets these things aflame exactly during this time of the year to really work it against them, to really raise their anger against each other, against whoever, so that he can continue to wage battle against them. Here he essentially destroys their livelihood. Vayomer plishtim in verse 6, Mi asa zos? The plishtim look into the matter and they say, who did this? Vayomer, others tell them, Shimshon chosan hatimni. Shimshon, the son-in-law of the Timni, of the person from Timnasa, as we saw. And they explain why. Ki lokachas ishto v'yitunol me're'ehu. They took his wife and they gave him to his friend. They gave her to somebody else. The Plishtim are upset, they're furious, they're angry at what had happened. Their stuff was burnt down. Shimshon, it seems perhaps as a legitimate gripe. But Yahlu Plishtim, the Plishtim not even flinching, not even hesitating, not even taking a moment to perhaps consider what they're about to do. Vayalu Plishtim, Vayisrifu Osava Esavia Ba'esh. They went and they burnt the father and the daughter. They killed them with fire. In other words, their act is a response to his act, and his act, Shimshon's act, is a response to the actions of the father and the daughter in taking a new husband. And they kill them. And it would seem that everything would then be okay. They're upset. Now that they satisfy their fury and their anger, one would think that all things are good. Shimshon uses an opportunity, as he's done with everything else, as an opportunity to increase the anger, to increase the fire here, to set them aflame more so that he can battle with them further and kill more. Vayomer lehem Shimshon. Shimshon speaks to them, he says as follows. Im ta'asun kazos, if you have done this, and if you do this, ki im nikamti bachem. I will now take a vengeance from you. Va'achar echdal, and then I'll stop. Essentially what Shimshon says in this verse, it sounds a little bit choppy, but essentially what he's saying to them is, if you only had done this before, if you had only had done this earlier, perhaps I would not feel the urge or the need to satisfy myself against you. As if he's saying, is the only reason you acted, did anything, was because I made some sort of an issue out of the situation. I came to you. I raised the complaint to you with respect to my wife and her new husband and the father of my wife. And if not for that, then you would not have done anything. You would not have kept up your end of the bargain, the law, with respect to spouses, if there in fact was a law of that type of variety. And you would not have done anything whatsoever here. So he says, I'm not satisfied. But I'd only be satisfied, he says, if I in fact take a vengeance against you myself. And so he does. Again, you can just see Shimshon ratcheting up the situation. Vayach osam shok al yarech makah gedolah. He hits them. He strikes against them a great blow. Shok al yarech makah gedolah literally means calf upon thigh. But according to many of the commentators, what it means is that he made them essentially run away, that they turned around and ran in the other direction, and that it means people who are on foot and people who are on chariots. He battles against them single-handedly, and he strikes against them a tremendous blow. And then he leaves, Vayered Vayeshev, his Seif Sela Eitan. And he goes and he rests, or he goes and he lives in a place called the cleft of the rock of Eitan. And for a moment it's quiet, but it does not last very long. So the Plishtim now come after Shimshon. Here now he has struck against them with the riddle. He has struck against them with the burning of their fields. And he strikes against them a third time now in the aftermath of the burning death of his wife. And now it seems perhaps that the Plishtim have had enough. Ve'elu Plishtim ve'yachanu bi'Yehuda. Verse 9, the Plishtim arise, the Plishtim come up upon the tribe of Yehuda, and they spread out in a place called Lehi. That Sofren points out, and something worth mentioning, is that for a very long period of time, centuries, the tribe of Yehuda had been quiet. Nothing had gone on in their circles. Nothing had gone on in any of their environs at all. Their borders were quiet. Their land was quiet. And they had no enemies. All the other battles that had taken place within the confines of other tribes and other countries. And now for the first time, after so many centuries of quiet, the tribe of Yehuda is somewhat infiltrated. And so they react. And they react in a very interesting manner. They take sides. And the side that they choose is their own, against Shimshon, and not necessarily in favor of the Plishtim, but rather for themselves. And for all that time that they're preparing and getting themselves ready and doing whatever it is that they're doing, in this specific moment, they view Shimshon in a certain light, and they view him essentially as a threat to their existence. And by virtue of the fact that perhaps he is worthy of death and is worthy of punishment at their hands because of his instigating behavior, they give him over. And it's very possible that they have no idea about Shimshon's plans or what Shimshon's doing or why he's doing it. It could be that they're as clueless as, per se, his mother and father are with respect to his actions, as they were with respect to his marriage. And they have no idea that this person is not a madman, and this person is not, run amok, but rather that there's something behind it, that it's Me'ez Hashem, it's, Biyad Hashem, that he's doing what he's doing. Shimshon's very careful in the follow-up to try and keep them as best as he can out of the situation and out of harm's way. Continue to keep the battle between him and the Plishtim. So the Plishtim arrive in Yehuda, and the people of Yehuda speak. They say to the Plishtim, "Why have you come upon us?" The Plishtim respond, "Le'asur es Shimshon alinu." We've come to get Shimshon. We've come to arrest Shimshon. Lasos lo kasher asalonu. To do to him as he did to us. To punish him back. So, Shevi Yehuda responds, instead of saying no, Bayer dushloshes alafim ish mi Yehuda, 3,000 men from the tribe of Yehuda, el seif sela etam, to the place where Shimshon was. Bayom le Shimshon, they say to Shimshon, verse 11, Halo yadata, did you not know, ki moshlim banu plishtim? Did you not realize, were you not aware, Shimshon, perhaps, that the Plishtim rule over us at this point in time, that we are in a situation where a provocation of the sort that you are involved in would cause us some harm? Hello, Shimshon, are you not getting that? Umazos asisalanu, what have you done to us? Why are you putting us into this situation? Why are you causing our lives to be so much of a greater stress than they already are? He responds, Kasher asuli, kain asisi lahem. I did to them what they did to me. Just like they did things to me, I did that to them. He's keeping it uniquely focused and directed on him versus the Plishtim. The Jews, the rest of you, stay out of this. Vayomer lo, La'asarcha yaradnu. We've come here to arrest you. L'sitecha bi'ad Plishtim. To give you over to the Plishtim. So they inform him of their intentions. Vayomer lehem Shimshon. Shimshon says to them, Hishavuli, swear to me, pentifku'un bi'atem. Swear to me that you yourselves will not harm me. Which sounds like a very odd statement. But essentially, again, he does not want to have to react against Bnei Yisrael. He does not want to have to do anything to them, and he wants to keep them out of harm's way. So as long as they're simply just giving him over, it seems like he's going to be okay with that. As long as they don't harm him anyway, they don't take any vengeance against him directly. They say back to him, no, ki asor ne'asarcha, we're going to arrest you, unesanucha biyadam, and we're going to give you over into their hands, v'hameis lo nemisecha, and we're not going to kill you. So, v'yasruhu bishnayim avosim chadashim, they arrest him, they bind him with new ropes, v'ya'aluhu min hasala, and they take him out from the place of the rock. So the story continues. Huba ad Lehi. He comes to the place unto Lehi where the Plishtim had spread themselves out. And what do the Plishtim do? Plishtim heirili kwasa. And the Plishtim either shouted at him, yelled at him, or they're, according to some of the commentaries, essentially singing a song of joy at the victory that they had against the great Shimshon. And suddenly it changes. Suddenly again, the Spirit of God rests upon him successfully, and the action in the moment changes completely, the resulting of which will be another blow struck against the Plishtim. Vatitzlach alav ruach Adonai, vatiyena ha'avosim asher al zro'osav, the ropes that are upon his hands, kapishtim asher ba'aru bo'esh, they become like flax that's burned in the fire, essentially meaningless, nothing. V'yimasu asurav me'al yadav, and as if they melt off of his hands. Suddenly he's freed. They had tied his hands with these strong ropes, and they have melted, essentially, as if they were in flame. V'yimtza l'chi chamur tiriya, and he finds the jawbone of a donkey, a fresh jawbone of a donkey. V'yishlach yado v'yekacheh, he stretches out his arm and he grabs it, v'yachba elef ish, and miraculously he kills 1,000 men with this jawbone of an animal. Amazing. V'yom Shimshon, b'lechi ha-chamor, chamor chamor asayim. Shimshon says, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've heaped upon heaps, I've taken more, I've killed more. B'lechi ha-chamor, hikesi elef ish. And with the jawbone of a donkey, I've hit and struck 1,000 men. And so it is that when he finished saying the statement, making this quote unquote one line speech, he throws the lechi from his hand. He calls the place Ramat Lechi, the hill of the jawbone. Another miraculous event in the life of Shimshon. He strikes down 1,000 men with one bone of an animal. The Jewish people are unharmed, completely out of the way. Shimshon continues to battle with the Plishtim, keeping with the theme. And as long as he is battling with them, there is no chance that the Plishtim are going to be victorious. The Ruach Hashem, the power spirit of God, rests upon him, and he is continuously victorious. V'yitzma ma'od. Miracles keep happening for him. In verse 18, he's very thirsty. V'yikur el Adonai v'yomar. He calls out to God and he says, "Atana stata v'yad avdecho es ha'teshuah ha'gedola hazos. You've just given to me this great salvation, this incredible victory, given to me, delivered into my hands by you. V'ata amus b'tzama. Shall I now die of thirst? Then fall to v'yad harelim, and then fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Meaning Shimshon says something similar and akin to what something his mother had said before. These miracles don't happen to me with the intent that I should die from them. Right? In the case of his mother, it was the notion that she envisioned and she had seen the Malach Hashem, the servant of God, the angel of God, and lived. And she tells Manoach that that wouldn't have happened. Such an event would not have occurred for them if God's intent was for them to die, but rather they should live from it and learn from it and base their lives around it. And Shimshon says the same thing. You've done this miraculous and incredible event for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Am I going to die now in thirst? How could it be? There's more to do. I have to go further. There's more to accomplish against them. So, Vayivka Elohim es hamachtei shesher balechi. God opens up the hollow of the jawbone. And water comes flowing out, vayesht, and he drinks. And his soul returns to him and he lives. And so it is that that place becomes known as the Ein HaKorei, right? The spring of the caller of the Lechi, right? Which is in Lechi or near the place called Lechi, which was based on the notion of his jawbone. And Shimshon judges the people for 20 years during the time of the Plishtim. Significant statement, that last verse. One could view it as a throwaway line, but it's clearly not intended that way. Recall that when we learned all of the other Shoftim and all their histories, that when it lists out the number of their years and to how many years they judged, it's two things. One, it's listed at the end of their life, which this is not. And two, it usually means that it's in a time of quiet, meaning that they had vanquished some sort of an enemy, and in the silence, in the peace period following, so they judge for X number of years, sachakol, totaling up in many, all the cases to X number of, whatever number of years it is. Here also, that's not the case. It's bimei plishtim, during the time of the plishtim. While the plishtim ruled over the land and ruled over this area of Eretz Yisrael, he was the leader of the Jewish people. So it wasn't in a period of quiet, it wasn't a period of relative calm in the way that one learns in the other Shoftim situations. And yet this is the Shimshon that we know of. And this is the when it is and how it is that Shimshon rules, quote-unquote, over the Jewish people. It's within the confines and the construct of the Plishtim. And he never really vanquishes or stops the enemy, the Plishtim, in the same manner that other judges before him had stopped their enemies. So what ensues in the next chapter in Tes Zion is essentially post his peak, that it's now the downfall of the great Shimshon that we're going to hear about, with one final act of greatness. But essentially at this point, Shimshon has reached the apex. He's gotten to the top, and that was where he's going to be. And what follows is essentially his downfall. And we'll see tomorrow in chapter 16, the downfall of Shimshon.